Thank you for downloading or streaming this episode of Band Biographies. You can find more episodes at bandbiographies.com. That's B-A-N-N-E-D biographies.com. If you enjoy it, why not leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts? Apparently, it helps get the show up the charts so more people can see it, to download it, and then to leave further 5-star reviews. Another way you can help is by telling as many friends as possible to give it a download. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, on Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for BandBiographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. But most of all, enjoy. Hello and welcome back to Band Biographies. I'm Tom Austin Morgan, your host, and I'm here to talk about what's been going on since the Giz Butt interview was released last month. Now you may have noticed that this episode is coming out on a Friday instead of a Monday, and that means only one thing. That this is the episode for the month, I'm afraid. It's a short one. I haven't been able to get the documentary done that I've been planning, and there's good reason for that. Instead, I'll be talking a little bit about my experiences of playing this mini UK tour with Sham 69 that I've been on in the last month. Firstly though, I'd like to thank Giz again for his time on the interview episode, and especially for picking up his guitar and playing songs for us down the line. I got a lot of great feedback from people who enjoyed that element of the interview as well. So maybe that's something that I'll kind of prep my guests for. If you want to hear more of people playing music down the line, perhaps I'll try and get them to do that going forward with the other interviews that I plan to do. As I said, no main episode this month, I'm afraid. Things just got away from me this month. What with playing around the UK with Sham 69 a few gigs, and also the fact that my paid work, the thing that actually pays the bills and the mortgage, that has kind of taken an extra kick up. I've got more clients on the books, and that's a great thing, but it does mean that I've got even less time than I had previously, especially with all the practicing and the gigs themselves and the traveling. So what I'm going to say now is that the December episode will definitely be a documentary on Stiff Little Fingers. I've been planning this and I've been writing this for months now, and I'm desperate to get it finished. And it's quite close to being finished. I just need to then record it and find all the clips and the music that I need to put into the bed. And then it will be there for you on or around or just after Christmas Day. I can't think when Christmas is at the moment, but it'll be the end of December, the last Friday in December. So I just wanted to get that out of the way now so that you know that I'm definitely going to work on it over December. Despite the fact that I've got quite a few social engagements on the way, I'm not, however, doing a European tour with Sham 69 this year. That has been called off, unfortunately, or in this case, fortunately. So we'll start off with the gigs that I've been playing. The first one was up in Widnes, a venue called The Snig, on the 6th of November, Saturday the 6th of November. That was a long drive. That was 4.5 hours. We all went up, not individually. I went up with Paul, former guest of the show, and Tim and Ian, the drummer and the singer, they went up in their own car as well. Luckily, though, I mean, the venue was amazing. The room itself had murals of various punk and ska musicians. There were loads of pictures of people playing and performing live up on the walls. There was even a log fire with scented wood, which was great, except it was far too hot at that point. I think even now it would be just about fine now. The temperature in the UK has dipped significantly in the last week. So that fire would have been great now. It was still up in the teens at that point. So yeah, that room was a no-go for sure. The best thing about this venue, The Snig, is that they actually put the musicians up in rooms above the venue itself, so there was no separate place that we had to go and drop our stuff off or like leave at the end of the night and get back to a hotel, all that kind of stuff. And even better than that, drinks were free all night. Whether or not that helped in our performance, I'm not entirely sure, but we tried to keep a lid on it until afterwards, and I think we largely succeeded. This was only the second gig that I've played with them since Skarmouth in October, which I think I said to you last month was a real kind of baptism of fire. Certainly the biggest stage that I've ever played on in front of the most people I've ever played to. So these gigs, they're on stages the size of which and the audience size of which I'm used to playing in front of. Still more than I would usually get in my local bands, but more manageable. The Witness crowd, they were a little bit reluctant to come forward, which, you know, is all well and good. But until about halfway through when we start playing, start to bring in the more well-known songs like Borstal Breakout. And then by the end, there were a couple of people with their tops off. There was one quite large man who bared his arse at us. That was good fun. And the people that run the Snig as well, I want to shout out to them. They basically run the place for the love of live music, and I think that's the way that these venues should be run. They basically were saying that it wasn't really for profit necessarily. Obviously they do make a profit, but it doesn't matter to them, how much they make, as long as people are having a good time and music is being put on and enjoyed. So that's something that should be commended, I think, in this day and age, especially. The backdrop was amazing. I think it must have been the Mersey. I mean, it was literally, the pub was on the river. And there was this giant kind of steel bridge or iron bridge right next to it, which was lit up at night, and it looked spectacular. Like I say, I stayed up until some wee hours of the morning with the people that owned the venue and their kind of small band of locals. And we got into it about, you know, our favourite bands, the history of punk music and things like that. And we, got well into our cups, I would say. I was the last one of the band up that evening, and I thought I was going to pay for it the next day. But luckily, I got away with it scot-free, or should I say hangover-free. So that was lucky for the drive home. Then it was a week until the gig in London at the New Cross Inn, which was a completely different beast again. I love the New Cross Inn. It was the last venue that I'd played in my other band, Swamp Stomper, before COVID restrictions came in, before the first lockdown here in the UK. We played there at the beginning of March 2020. And then our next gig was supposed to be the next week. And then we didn't play that until... when did we play that? October, I think, this year. So it was pushed back by like a year and a half, which was mad. So the last venue that I played in 2020 was one of the first venues that I've played in 2021, but with a different band. And it showed. I had some friends of mine, some old kind of university friends of mine, come down that I hadn't seen in the best part of 13 years, something like that. Chris and Liv, they turned up. That was great to see them. They're both lovers of live music and especially punk music, so they didn't want to pass up the fact that a friend of theirs now plays in a band that they enjoy listening to. There were a couple of bands on the before us, a couple of, well, I don't want to say support bands, but they were the opening act, shall we say. And they were really good, the Rum and Reggae Boys and the Anoraks. There was one man in the crowd who was having a brilliant time of it from the off, either drunk or not quite there, not playing with a full set, perhaps. He was having a great time. There's nothing wrong with that, but he was kind of interacting with a lot of people who, some of which didn't want to be interacted with. And by the time Sham got up on stage, the audience had grown. It was a sellout show, which was great. Lots of people there, lots of people wanting to have a good time. And unlike the Witness show, this London crowd were right at the front, right from the beginning, and having it straight away. And it just got more and more energetic throughout the set, which was great to see. I've never played to an audience that was so up for it, and it was brilliant. Again, more blokes with their tops off, this time much more chiselled blokes, though. So, you know, at least there was an improvement in that. There was an odd eclectic mix of people who looked like they'd just come straight from work, right through to kind of skinheads and punks to like glam rock type people, people that looked like members of Motley Crue. And that's what I love about London shows, like going to any kind of show in London, you never quite know who you're going to be stood next to. And it's something that I've really missed about going to shows, let alone playing them, is having that kind of communal sense of everyone having a great time and everyone there for the right reasons and just having a brilliant, brilliant time together and enjoying the music. The guy who was over cranking it right at the beginning of the show did get up on stage at one point, came past me while I was doing a solo during Borstal Breakout, staggered over to Tim the singer and hung off him for a chorus or a verse, and then started staggering over back towards me, which I hoped was the way off for him to get off the stage, but no, he kind of hung round behind me. I thought he was going to fall off the stage at various points. He was very unsteady. Luckily, just before he did fall straight off the stage, some people from the crowd managed to kind of usher him off quite politely, because he was falling into amps at the back of the stage. It's never a good look. For anyone. I'm not a fan of people getting up on stage necessarily, although we will get to that in a kind of more positive way later on. This guy really needed to have looked after himself a little bit better, I think. But it was literally the only negative in a really, really amazing positive night out. It was just great. The atmosphere, the energy in the room was brilliant, and I played pretty well. It was up to that point, it was the best gig that I think I'd played, and being my own worst critic, I'm always aware, hyper aware of everything that I'm doing, and I didn't have much to beat myself up about afterwards, which was great. Also, who else turned up? It was a friend of the show and former guest, James Crutwell, as well, from the Gonads. He turned up to show his support too, which was great to hang out with him again. The second time this year since we had our interview earlier on this year. So, yeah, lovely to see James. Hoping to catch him with the Gonads up in London at the 100 Club on the 18th of December. And then only a few days later, just 5 days later, we were up in Wigan, which was not that far away from Widnes, on the 18th, Thursday the 18th, at a venue called the Old Courts, which, if you couldn't tell from the name, used to be a court building. A massive room. I looked up the venues prior to going and thought, oh, that looks manageable, like, you know, mid-sized room. And it was a lot bigger in real life than it looked on the venue's website, that's for sure. Giant columns in the middle of the room as well, which was a little bit weird because it kind of compartmentalized the audience a little bit. This one was another four and a half hour journey up to Wigan. The opening band were a band associated with the Pete Shelley Memorial Campaign, actually, which was pretty cool. Was hoping to meet a couple of other people from that particular organisation, because Wigan is not that far from Bolton and Lee, especially. And I believe there were a couple of people there, but they didn't make themselves known to me. Unfortunately, we were on a real kind of tight schedule. We were supposed to go by bus, but the bus company fell through. They double booked, so we could only have it for one day and we needed it for three, because we were going up to Wigan and then we were travelling down to Cardiff to play a fourth show, and then we were coming home the day after that. So we needed it for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and they'd booked us out for it. And then they told us that we could have it for Thursday, but it needed to be back by Friday, which was never going to happen. So unfortunately, rather than get the gig van experience that I was looking forward to, we again had to go up in separate cars. Paul turned up to my house nice and early. We were well on time. And as he turned up, he realised that the inside, one of his inside front tyres was completely bald down to the canvas. So we had to go and get a new tyre fitted before we could even start off. So that put us on the back foot straight away. And then when we got up to Wigan, we got confused with the one-way system. It's always the last mile of a journey, isn't it? Oh, it's a killer. So we ended up going round and round for a little bit, and we ended up getting there just at the time that we should be loading in, just before sound check was due to happen, and nothing was really happening. The drum kit hadn't been set up, there were no amps on stage, and then sound check took forever. We finished sound check, went back to the hotel literally to drop our stuff off and have a quick bite to eat before getting back there. The opening band had begun already, which was a bit of a shame that we couldn't have been there from the start. And then it was just kind of getting yourself into the mode, into gig mode, in the little kind of green room, which was actually massive in this place, and really nice comfy leather chairs. Best green room so far, I would say. Yeah, we went on, we did our thing. The audience, again, was not as rabid as the London audience, but certainly much more obviously up for it than the Widnes audience had been right at the very beginning. And everything was going great. Everything went well. And then Paul's amp stopped working. Well, not Paul's, it was the opening band's amp. All of a sudden, we came back on to do the encore. He picked his guitar up and nothing was happening. And something similar had happened in London, actually, during exactly the same song, Hersham Boys. His string broke. Or no, his wireless system, the battery in it died while we were playing Hersham Boys, and he had to quickly change from his wireless to stick a wire into the amp and into the guitar and get going again. He broke a string in Widnes. Every single gig, something goes weird for Paul. I don't know what that's about. But yeah, so this time it was that the amp just stopped working. Nothing he was doing was helping. Myself and Ian just tried to keep a beat going and kind of, you know, do a little bit of improvising around some scales. And while Tim kind of kept the crowd entertained with a bit of banter, eventually some quite drunk bloke got up on stage. Didn't realise he was drunk at the time, or maybe he wasn't, maybe he was just aggressive, I don't know. And it looked like he was going to come and sort things out, you know, looked like he was going to offer a helping hand. And then he kicked the amp over, you know, which is always going to help. Yeah, whoever you are, guy in Dropkick Murphy's t-shirt, you were a bit of an asshole. There was no need for that. It wasn't our equipment, it was the opening band's. And that's just disrespectful. I found out afterward that he had also thrown a pint. Luckily, it was in a clear, it was in a plastic glass, but he'd thrown an entire pint. Luckily, the most of it hit the pillar in front of the stage, but some of it did soak Paul. Unfortunately, that guy gets into some scrapes. Yeah, so eventually what ended up happening was that the sound guy brought out a practice amp. So we're on this quite large stage. I mean, already the only amps that we had were combos anyway, so it looked like we had toy amps up there from the start. But now, with Paul playing through a practice amp, it looked even stranger. To get through the last couple of songs and off we went. Almost as soon as we were off stage, the venue, everyone filtered out of the venue, so I didn't get a chance to kind of chat with any of the crowd at that particular gig, which was a bit of a shame. However, I did get talking to the doorman, and he was a character. The next day, we got some decent sleep in the hotel that night. After kind of coming off, and I finally got to meet our merch girl, Rhiannon, and we had a couple of drinks when we got back to the hotel, and we had a good night's sleep, got up nice and early in the morning, and we set off for Wales. Paul and I got there with loads of time to spare. We were staying in Port Talbot, which was the next town over from Swansea. And Port Talbot, I don't know whether any of you have been there. It's a bleak looking place. It looks like something out of Blade Runner. It's just an industrial steel foundry surrounded by a small town on the sea front on South Wales. I can't imagine a lot goes on there. Let's just put it that way. We found out that there was a baked bean museum, but only as we were leaving. Otherwise, I think, you know, maybe we'd have taken some time out to have gone round there. But alas, maybe we'll have to do that next time. Anyway, we got there with about an hour and a half, 2 hours to spare before we needed to be in Swansea. So Paul and I took a little bit of a nap, chill out time. I did a little bit of work. And then we started getting ready because we needed to be at the bunkhouse in Swansea for about 5:30. We made it there. We were the only ones there. The other band hadn't turned up just yet. And also Ian and Tim were miles away. I don't think they made it there for another hour. So we were kind of sat around with nothing really to do, which was a bit annoying because we'd have rather spent a little bit more time in the hotel room, I think. But hey, these things happen, not a problem. The opening band was called NVS. They were a local punk band. They were younger kids. They were between 17 and 20, I think. And they have a style. They look like Sid Vicious, basically, the two guitarists or the bassist guitarist. And they've all got, yeah, they're all wearing black trousers with safety pins and all that kind of get up, spiky hair. The drummer has a kind of large afro mohawk. It was pretty cool. And they were great. They were brilliant and they were lovely kids. They were great. You know, meeting their manager, who was also one of their dads, it was one of those operations. And I love that. It's great seeing these local bands having a kind of professional attitude. And just acting the part. I mean, that's all you can do, isn't it? You know, fake it till you make it, or self-actualization. You know, if you act professional, you get perceived as professional, and therefore you are. And people take you more seriously. So yeah, great, brilliant lads. We'll be keeping an eye on them for sure. And yeah, so there weren't a large amount of people in at the Swansea gig. Initially, the room did fill up as we went on and started our set, and then it filled up a little bit more and a little bit more, and eventually it was quite a nice number of people, and it got lively again, mainly spurred on by NVS actually and their friends. You know, it was good to have some youth there, bopping about, pogoing and slam dancing and stuff, so that was quite cool. And then you know, there was a guy, Daryl. He apparently turns up to all of Sham 69's Welsh gigs and wherever he can, basically. If he's in the area and we're playing, he will make it. And lovely guy, Daryl, and his missus. But he gets up and sings a song at one point, and that kind of encouraged a lot more people up onto the stage during the last 4 or 5 songs. I ended up sharing a microphone with all of MVS and their friends. Paul ended up sharing a microphone with a bunch of other people. I think there were probably more people on the stage than there were on the floor by the end of the gig. It was great. It was a proper stage invasion, but it was a respectful one, and it was fun. And it was all in the spirit of the music and the spirit of punk, you know. It was, it was something that I've never experienced before, and I hope to experience many more times. It was absolutely brilliant. I mean, what a great few gigs to play. And everyone at the end of these gigs has said what a great time they've had, how brilliant they think the musicianship is. And just generally are fun to chat to, and and knowledgeable about music as well. You know, it's been really fun talking to strangers again, being at gigs again, being in rooms full of people, and kind of, you know, finding out about all sorts. You know, how many times they've seen of various bands and what other bands they're into and where your music tastes and tastes in certain bands overlap. These shows should have been a warm-up for the European tour this December, but thanks to COVID and various other things, it's not going ahead. But that only means that I've got more gigs around the UK next year to hone myself, get myself ready, because I think if Skarmouth felt like it being dropped in the deep end, then a European tour only after 4 or 5 gigs might have been a bit much. Having never shared a van with people, stayed in hotels with any of them, you know, you've got to know people that you're going to be hanging around with for the best part of a month, I guess. And so it's giving me another year to get bedded in, to get comfortable, for them to know me and me to know them, and share space with them on a more regular occurrence, hopefully in 2022. There will be more gigs. There are some being lined up all the time, and as and when they are definitely confirmed, I shall let you know. And if you're out there in the UK, or if you're out there in Europe when it comes to December next year, or possibly America, I'm hearing in September, America and Canada, I think, is what's being touted, with the UK subs will be coming out there then, I believe. Fingers crossed. So, at some point in the next year, I would hope to see some of you in person if you fancy catching up and coming along to a really good show. Obviously, though, that means that these episodes may get fewer and farther between. It just may happen that way, because obviously to support the fact that I will be playing with this band, I've got to do work more hours of the day and more often, and on weekends and things like that, when I would usually be making the documentaries and sorting out interviews and stuff. So that's a possible downside, but I'll try my hardest not to let that happen. However, what was interesting on the final breakfast after the gig in Swansea, we were back in the hotel in Port Talbot, and I was sat at the table with Rhiannon, and she was just casually dropping names, like, you know, she worked with Vivian Westwood's shop, and she was hanging around with Jordan and Susie, and she was like, oh, I've heard that you do this podcast and that you're, you know, you interview musicians and stuff, and I've got some friends I'm sure I could get in contact with you. And she name dropped a few people, and I was like, that would be incredible, because they're names that I would never be able to get to otherwise. Like, Rhiannon is part of the scene, essentially, which is very exciting. And without asking, I mean, I didn't even mention this podcast to her. She found out about it through, I think, Tim, not even Paul. And I didn't even really know whether Tim knew that I did this. So, it's without asking, she's becoming my booking agent, which is really exciting. And I'm talking to a couple of people about coming on the show very soon. And these are, you know, what I would consider big names. You know, they may not be the guys in the bands, but they were playing with the guys in the bands, and in some cases they are the band. It's all very exciting. I can't be more open, because who knows whether any of these things are gonna come off, but with any luck it will happen. And it will kind of things are on the up. I think I've got a good feeling about 2022, let's just put it that way. So, it just shows what saying yes and, just getting on with things and doing things that you love, rather than doing things because you have to or finding excuses not to do them, has got me in particular. And without trying to turn this into a self-help, hand-holding podcast, there is something in that. There's something about being positive, and there's something about kind of seeing yourself somewhere. And that was what I was saying about MVS. They see themselves as this kind of this professional unit. And I'm sure by following through with that, they will self-actualize that in the same way that I am kind of self-actualizing things with this podcast. It's been a great year for me personally. I know that things have been very, very dire in the world, but there's been the rough as well as the smooth, obviously. But I'm very excited to see what 2022 brings. And I hope that you are as well. I hope that this hasn't come across as 20 odd minutes of me just kind of rambling about how great things are going for me so far. I hope that you get some sort of residual satisfaction out of this as well, and that you're excited about what might be coming down the line on this podcast in the new year. Yeah. So that's basically all I've got to say on that. I've really enjoyed the gigs that I've played. I've kind of come through that week or so where I wasn't sure that I was enjoying it. I'm definitely enjoying it now, that's for sure. And gutted that I'm not going to be touring around Europe this year, but next year seems to be the year. So fingers crossed it will come off next year. And like I say, if you're in the areas that I'm going to be playing, I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to meet you. I'd love to chat to you about bands and find out a bit more about you guys. And it looks like I'll be in more places that may well be local to you. So keep looking on the Sham 69 website for gig dates. They will be being announced shortly, I believe. As ever, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and please do reach out to me in the meantime on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or by email, as well as leaving those ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. I haven't had any in a little while, and I'd love to get some more. But more than anything else, take care of yourselves, stay safe, see you in the pit. Thank you for listening to this episode of Band Biographies. If you enjoyed it, please don't forget to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for BandBiographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. See you next time.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.